Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? You want to go on instead of me?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With Us, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 3, Must Be a Guy Thing. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dave. Let's do this.
Hello.
For an episode with 4 plot lines, it's unbelievably boring. So let's get through it.
Yes.
Shall we? Starting with our D story, Steve is still stupid. In the good old student union, Steve's kissing his
class. I'd just like to take a moment to acknowledge. That my fine feathered co-host Tara Ariano is the one who puts together these episode rundowns and titles our sections, and sometimes they just fill me with such joy that I can't stop giggling. Just the sort of despairing acceptance of Steve still stupid.
I don't know how else to put it. I mean, there are more specifics, and we will get to them in just one second, but that's basically the gist of this plot line.
And most of the rest of, like, once they buy
the car circular,
it's just all Steve is still stupid all the time.
So in the good old student union, Steve is kissing his class schedule. I'm not sure what he's so happy about, given that we already know from the premiere he still isn't a junior. But anyway, he has no classes on Mondays or Fridays and nothing before 11 for the rest of the week in my notes. Fuck, that is a good schedule.
I know. Maybe he's not that stupid.
Maybe not. When I was in my fourth year of undergrad, by the way, I had a class from 2:30 to 4:30 in my major on Fridays, and I'm still furious about it, and it was 22 years ago, so this part of the storyline really speaks to me. So anyway, the show, there's a problem, which is that Steve is supposed to go see his advisor, which we assume is the same ones that Steve tricked into thinking he was a genius after cheating on his placement exam as a freshman. And we also get a throwaway reference here to David's mother, because David missed registration yesterday after spending the day with her. So David is still stupid, too. But anyway, David's mother still exists, but is exhausting to her son. Moving on. I can't believe this. It actually is the same actor who played Steve's advisor from 2 seasons ago. They couldn't remember when Kelly's birthday was in the last episode, but they dug up this dude again somehow. Anyway.
Meanwhile, Deshaun, nowhere to be seen.
Honestly. This guy's
is not stupid and has run far away from the show.
Godspeed, Cress Williams. We know you went on to better things. This advisor's gotten around to looking at Steve's high school transcripts 2 years later and noticed that he barely passed math then. Not sure which math, air quotes, that would be from, if it's from 12th grade. Like, I don't think you just have math anymore then. It's calculus or trig or algebra or stats, whatever. The upshot is that Steve has to take remedial math 5 mornings a week and will probably need a tutor. And it's a testament to my commitment to loafing that I actually feel bad that Steve's schedule is fucked up now. Cut to Steve, who's doing a classic Carrie Matheson chin wobble, which you can see in the visual aids at previously.tv. I made a GIF. And then Steve is interviewing potential math tutors, looking for either attractive or corrupt, but preferably both. He basically tells the first guy he wants to pay him to do Steve's work. The next one is a bimbo-ish girl who thought she was interviewing Steve. And the next one is Asian and responds to every question with, yeah, sure, because that's not offensive, although at least they did not put some kind of, you know, offensive tinkly oriental music under his scene. So thank you for small favors, I guess. Cut to Steve bitching to Claire about his math problem. Heh. She offers to help him, not by taking his exams, but by tutoring him. And after Ray's big Peach Pit After Dark show, which we will get to, Claire tells Steve she has tutoring rules. He does his own work. He does her practice problems. And if he breaks the rules, her price goes up. She charges $20 an hour. How much for topless? That he can't afford. End of plot line. Anything to add?
Nope. Next.
All right. Moving on to our C story. Dylan Hart's Noxzema girl. Brandon runs into Dylan on the first day of school. Both are tiresome about it in clip number two.
Wait a minute. It's the first day of school. You're on campus. Could it be you're finally going to do something constructive with your life? No, wait. Let me guess. You bought the college.
That's right. I bought the college. I'm going to turn into a nudist colony. All these people naked as far as the eye can see. Aren't you late for class or something? Well,
you're not going to tell me why you're here?
You said you didn't want to hear about it.
Well, now my morbid curiosity is piqued. What could Tony Marchette and CU possibly have in common?
Well, I'll tell you. Brandon's kid's an underclassman here. How about that? Shock of shocks. He's named after the old man. Junior's got an 8 a.m. economics lecture. I plan to be there.
What are you going to do? Sidle up to the guy and say, hi, I'm Dylan McKay. Can I be your friend so I can kill your father?
Something like that. How's the economics building?
Has no plan.
I mean, no, he does have a plan. Just stinks. It now stinks.
Also, neither of you is funny, is A. Stop trying to do comedy. You suck at it. B, since when does Brandon care if Dylan is shiftless? This is the second episode where it's come up that he's been like, you should come back to school. What do you fucking care? He's independently wealthy. He doesn't have to go to school if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, I don't. And again, with the accent, what are you going to do?
Hey. From Vancouver.
Hey, Banff. Take it down a notch.
Dylan is then sitting in the econ class as the prof calls roll, which I've literally never had happen in any class I was ever in college, but it's just so that he can call out the name Tony Marchette and a girl can answer. And it's Rebecca Gayheart, aka Noxzema Girl, and she has major bags under her eyes, but it's an 8 a.m. class, so I'll allow it. But Dylan is shocked. Like, wouldn't he assume that it was a girl? Does she spell her name with a Y also? If not, Dylan didn't guess she was female.
Think so. Like, if he knows that her name is Tony, mm-hmm. then presumably he would know that it was
T-O-N-I.
Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah, with an I.
Right.
Whatever.
The upshot being, once again, as we established in the last episode, Dylan is bad at all of this. Outside of class, he pretends to be on the phone as she comes out, and then he runs into her and knocks her books out of her hands to manufacture a meet cute. But when he asks her for coffee, she declines. And then he watches her butt as she departs. And I'm sorry that I cut a gif of this, but there's just zero chance that she has underwear on. That's all I'm saying. And I wouldn't have to notice that if the camera didn't linger on it pervishly. Moving on. Dylan contrives another run-in with Tony, who noticed that he wasn't in her class today. And he offers her a ride, but her father's driver is already there waiting for her because her father thinks she needs protection. As they approach, Dylan starts to say something about the lunch he had planned for them, but the driver interrupts to say that Tony doesn't take lunch invitations from strangers. But Tony overrides the guy, saying that Dylan has been following her since the day before, which, weird choice and bad way to put it, and says she is inviting him and that he should get in. And the driver glares at him while Dylan shrugs and hops into the car. And then we meet back up with them as they're finishing lunch, including takeout for the driver, which is very thoughtful. And over coffee, Dylan tries to figure out how much she knows about her father's business. And that's what we hear in clip 23. Sorry, three. Sorry.
What exactly is he protecting me from anyway?
Nothing. Everything. My father's imagination, mostly.
Mm. Yeah, what's he like, your father? Tell me about it.
Which one? The man who drives me crazy and makes me live at home instead of on campus, or the one who works so hard I sometimes wonder if he knows I exist, or the man who I love more than life itself.
I think I'll try what he does for a living for 500, Alex.
High finance, mergers, acquisitions, leverage buyouts, stuff like that.
Yeah, high finance, not exactly my thing.
What is your thing?
I don't know, a little of this, a little of that, a little of the other thing.
Obviously, you're a communications major.
Actually, I'm not a major at all. I don't even go to school.
Then what were you doing in my class?
Well, every September, I get this urge to go back to school, so I do. And then on the first day, my sense comes back to me, and I go to the beach.
Oh, a bum. Maybe my father's imagination isn't so vivid after all.
Yeah, I like her. I mean,
she's cute.
Whatever.
Yeah.
They're stupid, but they do have good chemistry.
They do. Yep. I don't have a problem with her. They leave, Tony suggesting that they get together that night. She knows how to get around her father's strictures on her movements. And she wants to meet Dylan at the Peach Pit after dark. What are the odds? And when we next see them, he's meeting her cab and suggesting that they go somewhere else, as we hear in clip just four.
Why? This is a great club.
Yeah, it is. I just, you know, I've been here a lot.
Really? I've never seen you here before.
Mostly I hang at the Peach Pit. It's next door, and I know everybody. And truth is, I bought this place once.
Very impressive. A bum like you owns a place like this.
It's amazing what money will buy.
Tell me more.
I'd rather not.
Why are you holding out on me?
I just don't like the idea of people hanging out with me because of my money.
I'll keep that in mind.
Well, it's not going to be your sparkling personality, Scrawn, so pick a lane.
Yeah. She convinces him to introduce her to his friends, which she does forever and not interestingly. This is really the only highlight, clip five.
Any friend of Dylan's?
Should have her head examined.
Steve.
Later, Dylan is getting ready to take Tony home after a successful Peach Pit outing when he actually goes to pay money and runs into Brandon at the counter in clip six.
Beautiful girl. Hadn't noticed. You expect me to believe that? You can believe whatever you want.
Talk about your Capulets and your Montagues. You're headed for a tragic ending, Romeo.
It's in Shakespeare, Brandon.
Oh, no. But it is classic McKay.
Yeah, true.
Dylan then drives Tony home to her very predictable columned mansion, and they have this discussion in the car in clip seven.
This is not a house. This is more like a castle. I'm surprised you people don't have a moat.
My dad started from nothing, and all this reminds him of how far he's come.
Sounds like you're his biggest fan.
I'm a daddy's girl. I'm proud of it. I know the answer to your question.
What question?
Am I happy?
Oh, yeah, that question. Well?
Yeah.
Not for long, Detsky.
Yeah.
I'd also like to note, yes, from Trivia Corner, since yes, she is Noxzema girl.
Yes.
Noxzema started out as a patent medicine in the 19th century, and it was called Dr. Bunting's No Eczema Cream.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew it I knew the no eczema part. I didn't know the Bunting part. That's awesome.
Yes. And you knew in your heart, no relation.
I'm sure.
Because I do not live in a columned mansion. Oh, no.
So they kiss, and then we pull back and see that the other Tony is watching from above and orders Bruno to check Dylan out. Okay. Moving on to the B plot. Brandon meets a feminist! Exclamation mark.
Oh, God.
So we start this plot line with the display of the front page of the Condor. Oh, my God. It says, "School starts." That's the headline of the front page. So listen, it's just a great headline because of how informative it is to students who will be getting the paper on campus.
On campus.
Also, it's a school. What else would be starting? Also not fall semester starts. We already heard from Steve that he was in summer school. School never stops. It's a university. God, who cares? I tell myself. I don't know why I have to keep being university cop, except the show makes me, and I hate it.
Also, you're trying to postpone the rage stroke that hear right, building across five time zones behind my left eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of the paper, we find out it's a key component of Brandon's plan to get his academic career back on track now that he crapped up a year being president and not being president anymore, no longer has pull with the chancellor to get him a good class schedule. So he's going to join the paper, or as he more obnoxiously puts it, clip eight.
I'm going to be a journalist.
Ah, just like your old days at the Blaze, huh?
You don't think I spent my summer interning at the Boston Herald for nothing, do you? Well, my good friend Steve here is trying to convince his advisor that the cocktail hour has some sort of academic value. I am going to be shooting for a column on the Condor.
Don't get your hopes up.
Why not?
Well, this editor is no Andrea Zuckerman. Check out her first editorial. Must be a guy thing. Top 10 list of boorish behavior designed to introduce incoming co-eds to a new and distinct species, the college male.
You see that?
No, I'm reading it. Number 10, thinking any woman who won't go out with them is a lesbian.
Number 9, calling any woman other than a grandmother a chick.
Number 8, flirting with other women while on a date.
Oh, I
hate that.
Number 7 and 6, a tie, bikini calendars and beer can collages.
Art is very subjective.
Mm-hmm. Number 5, ESPN.
What about ESPN2?
For people who do.
Number 4, constant...
interruptions. What is she talking about?
Number 3, liking Rush Limbaugh. Number 2, liking Howard Stern. And the number 1 boorish behavior incoming coed should be aware of in guys. And this one is right on.
Expecting to score on the first date.
That's a bad thing?
Ew.
Okay, first of all, she's fucking exactly like Andrea Zuckerman, Kelly. Shut up.
Uh-huh.
Second of all, I don't actually see a problem with scoring on the first date, but whatever. Like, poor Susan. Another perfectly fine character about to be assassinated, primarily because she's going to make out with Brandon a bunch. Spoiler.
But she does have some enjoyable moments, and we're about to hear a couple of them, starting with Brandon shows up at the Condor office and meets a woman who is our kind of people, clip 9.
I'm Brandon Walsh.
So?
MVP for life!
Yes! That should be the end of it, but because it's Brandon, he can't let it be, and so their interaction continues into clip 10.
So I sent you my clips from the Boston Herald.
Obituaries, if memory serves. Real impressive. I need 100 words out of that story, and the lead's all wrong. Save allegedly for paragraph 2. Okay. Was there something else?
Yeah, actually there was. I wanted to talk to you about writing a column.
300 words or less, but I warn you, we print freelancers on the basis of talent, not reputation.
You don't understand. I don't want to write a column. I want to be a columnist.
I know this may come as a shock, but people here actually work for the chance to get a column on this paper.
I've worked, just not here. As ex-president, I can write with a lot of insight about student government.
And get a very public platform for next year's election. How convenient.
No. I'm through with politics.
Stop the presses. Walsh retires. Students spared.
Did you object to my policies or the fact that I wear pants?
Truth be told, I object to everything about you.
But you don't even know me.
Exactly. Why ruin a good thing?
Oh, boy.
And we're supposed to think she's a big old bitch, but we actually want to kiss her with tongue.
Yep, she's...
Susan.
She's pretty great. So then Brandon brings Susan a spec writing sample, which he has not thought sufficiently about in clip 11. This is long, but
it must be a girl thing.
A top 10 list of annoying behavior intended to introduce incoming guys to a new and distinct species, the college female.
You're not serious.
No sense of humor. That's number 6.
Dancing with other girls. Raising the curve by flirting with the professors. Pretending guys wanted more.
Takes 2 to slam dance.
Or 1 in a wall calendar. I've read enough.
Ooh, you're only down to number 7.
Foreplay.
Comes as a complete shock. You print this, you'll be doing a real public service.
Excuse me. I have to get back to the real world now.
Only interested in one set of opinions, her own. That would be number 1.
You're right. Perhaps I didn't give your column the proper attention it deserves.
Wait a second. What exactly is your problem with me?
Don't flatter yourself. It's nothing personal.
Then what is it? My clips are good, and even if you don't agree with what I did as president, you know that my experience will make good copy.
Before yesterday, had we ever met?
No.
Exactly.
So you don't like me because we're strangers?
Brandon, when you were president, the only person on this paper you dealt with was the editor. Just like in the administration, the only person you dealt with was the chancellor.
And you think I need to be brought back down to earth? How sweet.
I think getting your ego into the solar system would be achievement enough.
Judging by your opinion of men, I would say you're the one with the untamed ego.
As if your opinion of women is so sensitive.
Oh, my opinion is right on, and I can prove it.
Really? And how do you plan to do that?
The way any good journalist would. A little research. You and me go into the field. We observe men and women together in their natural habitat.
Nice try. You don't work for this paper.
What's the matter? You afraid you're going to find out that women really aren't superior after all?
I never said we were superior. Just better.
Peach pit after dark, 8 o'clock. Be there or be square.
A lounge lizard and a throwback. What an attractive combination.
So it's a day.
Certainly not. It's a challenge.
I will note also that he grabs her arm really aggressively during this exchange, and mm-hmm. it makes me want to punch him in the dick until he's dead.
Yeah. He's terrible and the worst and awful. That said, it does. Then their interaction ends with her stalking off and him breath spraying himself with Banaka like a fucking idiot.
Oh my God. Make Banaka even back then?
Yeah.
And the fact that she was clearly already starting to give him the sex eyes and doing that like Spice Girls feminism, like, mm-hmm. we're better than boys. Yeah. Man.
No, ugh, not helpful.
No, not good.
And you can kind of tell that the actress whose name I can't remember, what is her name?
Caulfield. Emma Caulfield.
That she knows she's above this, but like, I'll just do it. Like, you can tell how much better she is when she went on to be on Buffy, but still, like, she knows this is supposed to be their, like, Tracy Hepburn effort. I mean, they're meeting the writers, and that she's above it, but she does her best. Moving on, when Brandon goes to the Peach Pit after dark and bypasses the line, Susan calls out to him and he sees her in it, and she's much friendlier in her club clothes while he's pulling her inside. And then inside, off to in a line to the bathroom, I think they snipe at each other until Susan catches the eye of some bro at the bar who comes over and hits on her in clip 12.
Excuse me, but I can't help but wonder, do you have a mirror in your pocket?
No, why?
Because I sure can see myself in your pants.
As you were saying?
Men are scum. Hey, seriously. haven't we met somewhere before?
Yeah, we have. I'm the secretary at your VD clinic.
Susan, why wouldn't you be the doctor at his VD clinic?
Oh, that's a good point.
You've internalized some sexism here,
yeah.
Susan.
That's a good point I didn't even think of. I have too, obviously. Still a good line. Later, Susan and Brandon have a dumb conversation about chivalry as he insists on walking to her to her car, and he jokes about proving her list right and trying to score on the first date, but she just chuckles and thanks him. And this is where I would note, this episode was written by John Eisendrath, who went on to write for Felicity and Alias. So either he got more woke after this, or else he was hiding his actual knowledge of feminists and feminism for the sake of these dumb characters, or all of the badness of this plot line is up to a Jason Priestley who directed. Who's to say? Anyway, Brandon then the next day returns to the Condor to say he can't believe that Susan ran his column, and they discuss it in clip 13.
Well, I decided if you wanted to hang yourself, I might as well give you the rope.
So am I dead yet?
A dissenting view, no matter how misinformed, never hurt circulation, which is why I'm giving you one column a week, $50 a column, and you're welcome.
Thank you. I'll only accept on one condition, though. Have dinner with me.
Why would I want to do that?
Why not?
Because we have nothing in common. In fact, you really get on my nerves. You're one of the most antagonistic people I've ever met.
So you like Italian?
You haven't listened to a word I've said.
Must be a guy thing.
Bye, Walsh.
Bye, Keats.
Funny column. Phone's been ringing off the hook.
Any more good news?
Yeah, he's got a cute butt.
Tell me about it.
No, do not. Do not tell anyone about it. How can you even tell his pants are a zip code?
Thank you. How can you even tell also, he has a butt? Never mind what it looks like.
You get paid on the college paper in the what now?
Yeah, I don't.
That seems wrong.
Anyway.
But I didn't work for the quote real paper in school, so what do right. I know?
I don't think anyone ours did either, but anyway. On to our A story. Val and Colin have a past plus Ray stuff. Who cares? everyone at the Peach Pit is bummed out about school starting again, except Claire, a nerd, when Kelly lurches in with Colin to introduce him to everyone, except she's too late. Clip 14.
I think you know everybody except Steve and...
Colin?
Colin Robbins?
Valerie?
You guys know each other?
Yeah, we traveled through Europe a couple years ago.
Okay.
Oh.
Is that a euphemism for, well, anyway, apparently Kelly thinks it is a euphemism for something because her bitch face is instantaneous.
Well, it doesn't help that Val is like staring and biting the inside of her cheek for a week and a half. So yeah. Not that I'm on Kelly's side exactly, but Jesus Christ, Val, like excuse yourself and go change your panties for God's sake.
The next day, Steve drives Val to school because her car is in the shop, which he uses as an opening to suggest that she should have asked her old boyfriend to drive her. And Val says it was a teen tour and nothing happened, though she was very into Colin at the time. Steve asks if she's still carrying a torch, and she says it's more like an eternal flame. Oh, Val. Elsewhere, Claire and Donna are speculating about Colin and Val in Europe in clip 15.
Oh, I can see it now. Valerie and Colin in Europe together, kissing under the Bridge of Sighs in a gondola in Venice.
Sipping lattes in a cafe in Paris.
And of course, one in Rome.
Well, maybe they didn't get to Rome.
Valerie always gets to Rome, usually by the second date.
The fuck is wrong with you people?
It's such a Samantha Jones line, too. It's
like, I know. Very, what the hell?
Usually okay. By the second date. Also, they're both in crop tops with macrame backpacks. Just throwing that out there. There's a picture in the visual aids, but like, really? We're that twinsy already just because we live together? Anyway.
Gross.
Kelly rolls up behind them at this point and clears her throat to shut them up so that she can claim she doesn't care and isn't jealous. Mm-hmm. But when Colin meets her later at the student union and kisses her in front of the gang, Val is rattled and Kelly is smug as hell, like a bitch. And later still, Kelly finds Colin in an art studio at school. He tells her to sit so that he can sketch her, like she needs more validation about her looks or chances to look at a visual representation of herself and say it/she is beautiful. But anyway, he was at school to talk to a friend who's apparently offered him a teaching job, even though if Colin went on a teen tour with Val, he is at most 3 years older than the gang. So, okay. But he doesn't want to take the job. And his reason is, of course, embarrassing for us to have to hear in clip 16.
I came to Los Angeles to work on my art, not somebody else's.
I thought you came to Los Angeles to be with me.
So who's more obnoxious here? I'm not a sellout guy, or I thought everything was about me, girl.
It is a tough call, but I didn't mention this in either of the other episodes, but every time he calls himself an artist, it's so cringy. Like, anyone you know who actually is an artist does not call themselves that. They say, like, I'm a painter or I'm a sculptor or whatever. Like, artist is so lame and pretentious and he's a dink. Anyway, she's so unjealous of Colin and Val that she brings it up in clip 17.
You know, my friends are giving me a hard time about you.
About what?
They say I should be a jealous shrew because you used to know Valerie.
Oh, come on. We traveled through Europe together. We were kids. She was like 12 or something.
15, but who's counting?
Yeah, we'll add 20 pounds and stick a set of braces on her teeth and you get the picture.
Well, in case you haven't noticed, she's grown up a little.
I noticed.
That makes one of you. Bitch.
You can relax now. Come here.
It's beautiful.
Told ya. Excuse me. I put that in my notes before I got to the end of the scene because I knew she was going to do that. And then she did. Kelly is terrible.
Yeah, she's awful.
I'm sticking Ray's bullshit in this plot line since it's Peach Pit After Dark adjacent, like Collins. But he gets a call at work and he's a metal worker now. He's like cutting a pipe or something. I thought he was a carpenter. No idea. Who cares? Donna calls him at work to say that the broad who lost her ring wants to show her gratitude for its return. And her husband is the president of a record label and he's coming to see Ray play the next night. Speaking of, Colin is at the counter at the Peach Pit when Val comes over in a tizzy with a bunch of maintenance jobs for Nat. Colin asks her if she works there and she explains the whole situation and they have a flirty conversation about their teen tour. There was some kind of a sleeping bag drama revolving around Val's roommate who apparently Colin hooked up with. By the way, did you all forget Colin is an artist? Let him remind you in clip 18.
Nice wall.
Well, it does keep the ceiling off the floor.
Oh, no, you're not seeing the same thing I'm seeing. A wall like that to me is a canvas. And that canvas is crying out for a mural.
I mean, it's going to be crying. We all are. Because when he's finished, it's the fugliest fucking thing in Beverly Hills.
Not good. It's right at this point that Kelly comes into the Peach Pit looking for Colin, and Nat directs her next door, where he is still embarrassing himself in clip 19.
Imagine, Val. This would be the largest piece I've ever worked on. So what do you think?
I think it's a great idea.
So do I. Okay, we have a deal. Hey, Kelly. See that wall? A month from now, floor to ceiling, it's going to be an original Colin Robbins.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, she's being a bitch, but yeah. No.
Well, when we come back to them, oh my God, how is Colin still testifying about this? Clip 20.
After dark. You know, the things you see after dark. Night. Neon. The 59th Street Bridge. Sliver of moon.
Is this a game too could play?
Sure. Close your eyes. All right, what do you see?
Steam pipes. Taillights on yellow cabs. You know, New York.
We'll bring a little bit of Gotham right into the heart of Beverly Hills.
We get it. You're so New York.
He's so New York, he calls it Gotham, as no one who lives there ever does.
Why not paint a mural of Frisco while you're at it?
David comes in to supply another very brief reference to his time-consuming mother before Val comes out of her office to yell at him for being late, even though Ray isn't actually there yet. And David also barks back at her about the Peach Pit after dark being small potatoes compared to the Greek, so both of them can shut up. But anyway, Kelly then asks to speak to Val, and in her office offers some unsolicited advice she is not qualified to give in clip 21.
You are way out of line down there.
Well, thanks for the advice. But I think I can run my own club.
Do you even know why David was late?
Probably overslept.
No. He was moving his mother from a halfway house to an apartment.
Oh. I had no idea.
No kidding.
Wait a minute. Are you coming down on me because of the way I treated David? Or the fact that I hired Colin to paint a mural?
That depends. How are you treating Colin?
Like a friend. Nothing more.
Going back to Artivo for a second.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys ever read the Life is Hell, How to Be a Sensitive Poet comic strip?
Oh, yes. Yes. It was totally pinned above my desk. Yeah. I am a barn, creaking.
Yes, creaking. Yes.
So good. Yeah. Oh my God.
So good. And he totally has a black turtleneck on and all the frames. Yep. Love it.
Val then apologizes to David later that night for being a jerk before, and he tightly tells her not to worry about it because he doesn't want to talk about it. Val asks about his mom and he shrugs that she's fine. So then Val has to say that Kelly told her what's up, and he says he hopes that being in an apartment will help his mom. Val says she has a lot of experience with crazy parents if he ever wants to talk. Not so much that using that word isn't inappropriate, but anyway. He sort of laughs her off, so she gravely says that some parents are crazier than others, and as he leaves, he thanks her more sincerely, so that's nice, I guess. And then David goes to the green room to collect Ray, who is very nervous. David can barely care as he reassures him. And then the Cormans come in with their daughter. Ray tries to temper expectations, and the Cormans kid is a gorgeous shithead in clip 22.
Got any soda or chips or something?
Jessica.
Not up here, sweetie.
This isn't much of a dressing
room. Excuse her. She's used to a larger venue.
Yeah, shortly after that, she makes a big show of yawning and... us.
There's a gif. Everyone tries to blow past that until Jerry says that Jessica's the barometer. If she likes Ray, he's good as gold, which, I mean, I get it, but like maybe if she was 15, but she's about 8. So I don't understand how she's that much of a barometer for pop music. Whatever. Then she yawns and it's great. On the floor, Kelly and Colin flirt, and Val and Brandon watch them morosely. And then Ray takes the stage. We actually hear him play in clip 23.
put a soul in my soul for you. Would have lived my whole life through for you. All blood, sweat, tears for you. But you're running away from me.
Hard to believe.
All right, that's enough. This basically.
Oh no, the stop button's not working. I'm pressing it over and over, but
fine.
Dave, stop.
That's it.
David.
The song is fine. He's not a good singer, though.
No,
his voice is so weak.
He's a little pitchy, dog.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah. Anyway, fortunately for Ray and his bad song, Jessica is into it. And then Donna brings Ray into the Peach Pit later as Jolt Records' newest artist, but Ray tells her not to jinx it because he hasn't actually gotten an offer yet. But Donna is sure about his chances, so I guess you can take that straight to the bank. And later, the next day, Colin wakes up Kelly and then tells her to sleep. I mean, he's leaving, but like, leave a note. Sleep is important. Whatever. He made her breakfast. He's going to the Peach Pit after dark to paint the mural. She's admiring a painting he just whipped off while making breakfast when the phone rings. It's got a metal cord like a payphone. Did you notice that?
No, it is a payphone.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
There's several photos because, of course, that pretentious asshat has a payphone in his loft. Earth. Whatever.
Speaking of whatever, it's Claudia from New York at the gallery. And so Kelly takes the message and then stares at it for like 10 minutes. Like, why would it be? She's from a gallery. Who cares? Whatever. And then Colin is unloading his gear when Val pulls into the parking lot and they have a vaguely flirty yet boring conversation until she finally gets around to saying she had a crush on him since they met. But kissing him was just a fantasy, which is when he leans in and kisses her. No tongue. She says she'll never forget it. And that's the end.
Exactly.
Sarah, who is your most valuable player of this episode?
Susan Keats.
Yeah, agree. If for nothing else, if the only thing she did in the episode was I'm Brandon Walsh, so that's enough. Dianu. Susan Keats. All right, least valuable player. Dylan, the world's worst secret agent.
Solid choice. I'm gonna go with Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Also fair. Very
in fact,
fair.
We can probably just put that on auto. Uh-huh.
Speaking of, nothing. There's no segue from that. So let's just do the Kim Challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. It's dangerous to make out with a mobster's daughter in your convertible with the top down in her driveway while he watches.
It's bad to try to make jokes with anyone, but especially Brandon, because neither of you is funny, and I wish the show would stop giving Dylan humorous things to do, because it does not work.
Yeah, I guess it's bad if you're just not going to go to school. I don't particularly care, but in general, if you do have the opportunity to pursue a higher education, you should.
It's sort of dangerous to let other people know that you don't want people to be friends with you for your money. Like, I don't know. That's just bad, I think. And dumb. I mean, I guess it's not dumb to know, but.
Yeah. It's dangerous to be so obvious about stalking a girl that she tells her driver/security guard that you are stalking her. And that makes five.
Yeah, that's pretty bad and dangerous. Speaking of dangerous, next time I'm again with this. Extra, extra. The gang's all here for Tournament of Roses tryouts. And Brandon and Susan's His Girl Fry Bray cosplay drags on almost as long as Ray's audition for an exec's bratty tween. And if you think math was hard for Barbie, wait till Steve tries to do it. The only right answer to the problem of our visual aids is barf squared, and you can find those for this episode and all the other episodes of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I am Thing You See After Dark, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I'm here with my co-host for Day Weekend, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, of course, is the secretary at your VD clinic. He's David T. Cole, and he's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Uh-oh. Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.